And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light. This program comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our drama today is Morton Wishengrad's adaptation for radio of a story by Alan Marcus entitled The Girl Without a Name. Featured as Anna is Mitzi Gould. Roger DeCoven is the narrator.
Two people. There was Anna, and there was her friend, the girl without a name. Two people suspended upon the margin of life. They were vulnerable, very vulnerable, because out of the web of their recollection, the memory beyond all memories was the memory of fear. Such little fears as the prosaic sound of footsteps. The girl without a name cowered before the sound of a knock on the door. They held each other by the hand at a whisper outside a window. They were afraid of sounds. They were afraid of silence. They were always afraid. And always it was the simple, the ordinary, the unportentous little things which gave them fright. Like the way a woman laughed. Or the way a man looked at them.
Anna. Anna, I'm frightened.
I am with you, Sophia. Don't be frightened.
Why do you call me Sophia? I have no name. I'm a girl without a name.
But people must have a name. After all, you cannot call a person by the number tattooed on the left forearm. Anna and the girl without a name, they were survivors of the concentration camp of Auschwitz. They were the liberated. They were alike in appearance, bellies equally bloated, eyes equally cavernous, hair equally lusterless, ankles and wrists equally swollen. And yet they were different, for Anna remembered who she was. Anna remembered where she was, what had happened to her, what had happened to her parents, her brothers, her friends. But the girl without a name had been blessed with forgetfulness. She had vomited years of association clearly and bodily out. And she needed Anna. She needed her desperately.
I will call you Sophia. My mother was called Sophia.
It was Anna who had found the little village in Germany.
We will stay here.
You both belong in a displaced persons camp.
Please help us stay here. They will not understand her condition. They will be professionally sympathetic.
And so they found a room on the third floor of a house, a tiny room. An American soldier of the local military government team helped them find it.
Anna, I'm leaving for the States. Before I go, you're welcome to this.
Money?
Sure, use it the best way you can.
I will use it on Sophia. Danke.
Don't mention it. Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen.
It was a tiny room on the top floor, but it was a new beginning.
Anna. Anna. I do not know why I cry. It is a bad thing when you cry and you do not even know what for.
right. You're a bigger. Today you only cried for 2 hours. Sophia, you are much better.
Anna. Anna, it is dark. I am afraid of the dark. Anna? Anna, why is it dark?
I am here. Here's my hand.
Anna? Anna, why is it dark?
It is night. When it is night, it is always dark.
Anna, do you know something?
What is it?
I have not been afraid today. Not even once.
There was an improvement. Anna could even leave her a little while now, but always at night, Anna was there holding out her hand, warding off the phantoms that came in the night. It should have been a life drab to the extreme, but Anna knew a game which helped to pass the time.
There is this money the American soldier left us. What shall we buy with it, Sophia?
It was a good game. What to buy, where to buy it. It was a very good game. Sophia would smile in contentment. She was improving. Anna could see it. The inconsolable fits of sobbing were less frequent now. She had even begun to evince an interest in clothing. And this was the time that Anna conceived the idea of buying the piece of cloth.
Sophia, how would you like a new skirt?
Anna, it is still the game.
No, this is a real skirt. What color would you like?
The same color as your new skirt.
Very well. A blue skirt?
All right, Anna.
You can have another color.
Yes, Anna.
Red or green. Any color, Sophia.
Anna, you are sure you will get a blue skirt?
Yes.
Then I also wish a blue skirt. I want to get the same as you get, Anna.
Sophia.
You are crying?
No, I'm not.
There are tears in your eyes, Anna. It is because of me.
Darling, someday. Darling, please, someday, want something for yourself. Not because I want it, but because you want it. Just for yourself.
That is why you are crying, Anna?
I don't know. Perhaps. Oh, you wait here. There is some bright blue cotton material in Herr Meyer's window. I won't be gone long. Just stay here and watch out the window.
Anna, Anna, come back soon?
Yes. Yes, I'll come back soon.
In the window of Herr Meyer's shop lay the roll of bright blue cotton. Anna wanted it, yet there was something that had to be conquered before she could enter the shop. Out there on the sidewalk, in the pleasant sun of the warm Bavarian afternoon, out there for her there was an undercurrent of terror. Was it the sight of Herr Meyer inside? Yes, it was that. It was the sight of all the faces. It was the nightmare fear that the Americans would leave someday. She had dreamed this in a dream many times. The Americans were gone. She and Sophia were all alone. And then the tramping of many feet in the door of their room broken down in a sea of faces. And among the faces, the Herr Burgermeister, the man downstairs, the boy who lived across the street, and Herr Meyer.
Yeah, bitte?
Herr Meyer, I want...
Yes, Fräulein?
Please, I would like to buy some of the blue material in the window.
The blue material in the window, that is very dear, Fräulein.
I am very satisfied with that material. It is what I've been looking for.
Indeed, Fräulein. Naturally, you have the marken to purchase the material.
Marken?
Ration stamps. One must have ration stamps before one can buy. My regrets, but that is the system, Fräulein.
From where did her terror of him come? When Herr Meyer pronounced the word Fräulein, a certain inflection came into his voice. It was hardly perceptible unless you were hyper-conditioned to register the smallest fraction. The smallest fraction of what?
The feeling of fright broke through, came close to the surface, and drained away. After running 2 blocks in the wrong direction, she thought of Sophia waiting. She wiped the sweat away, and she spoke very reasonably to herself.
Anna, you have a right to get Marken now.
It was a reasonable thing to say to yourself.
You have only to go to the German Civil Administration and ask in a polite way.
It was very good sense, except for the fact that the idea that she, Anna Berg, might ask the German Civil Administration for anything.
Anna, don't be such a baby. The war is over. Nobody's going to hurt you.
She was thinking it over, sitting on a bench. Just thinking it over. A young couple passed. There was room for them on the bench, but they passed. Then she got up. If she had looked back, she would have seen them watch her go. She would have seen them circle back. She would have seen them sit down. But then Anna didn't have to look back. It wasn't at all necessary. She had anticipated every posture, every expression accurately, even to the laugh. Anna had known that they would laugh in exactly that way. It was the thought of Sophia, the thought of the girl without a name, that made Anna hurry to the ugly, squat administrative center in the middle of the town.
Die Wollenbitter?
I was sent here to get Marken, to get ration stamps for cloth. That is, I want
to... Have you seen Herr Griebel, Fräulein?
No.
All requests are to go first to Herr Griebel. Please do not forget that in the future you are to go first to Herr Griebel. Your name?
Anna.
Your whole name?
Anna Berg.
Polish?
No. Polish Jewish.
That is different. For you, it will be necessary to get a written Bescheinigung from the military government.
But my friend is waiting for...
We cannot deal with such cases before we have a written Bescheinigung from the American military government.
Please, I want to buy just a little cotton cloth to make a skirt for a girl.
Fräulein, you must go to the military government for permission. Bestehen Sie eine Erlaubnis. Bestehen Sie eine Erlaubnis. You need permission. Do you understand?
If you had read the words in a newspaper or in a book, what would be amiss? Only the tone of voice, the burst of hysterical passion that seemed so ready to break through at any moment. That is not written down in the newspapers or the books. The American soldiers at military government headquarters did not notice the hesitant figure in the doorway. They were playing cards. She waited for several minutes. Then the tall, angular sergeant looked up. His high school German was slow and grammatically weird.
Ja, bitte? What is it you wanted, please?
They talked slowly.
What's her Royal Highness want? Let's go on with the game.
Oh, wait, will you? Did you see what she's been through?
The sergeant explained he had no authority to grant the allowedness. He was terribly sorry, but the lieutenant was away.
I will wait.
I wouldn't do that. Look here, Fräulein, it's Friday afternoon. The lieutenant... Well, why don't you try Monday?
Hey, what did you say to her, you lug? She's crying.
Didn't say anything. Just told her to come back Monday.
Yeah, well, that's nothing to cry about, so what's she crying about?
How should I know? Just try to figure some of these refugees out.
Tell her to stop crying.
I want to tell her yourself. I'm not interested anymore.
The sergeant tried to dismiss her. Something stayed him.
Okay, Fräulein, wait a minute.
What are you going to do, mope or play cards?
I have no right to give her any kind of a note.
Let's play cards.
Probably get eaten out for butting my face into it.
Correct. It's your deal.
Hey, Fräulein, take off. We're busy. Scram-a-boo, understand? Rouse.
Cut that out.
Well, do we play cards or do we gas? I wanted to blow.
She's been in a concentration camp. That makes you pretty tough, doesn't it?
I didn't put her there. What do you want me to do, break down and cry?
Get away from that typewriter.
What are you going to do?
Fräulein. What's your name?
Anna Berg.
Sergeant, you haven't got the authority to do that. Sergeant, you don't know what you're doing. You can't let her go into a store and buy something without ration stamps if Lieutenant Smith ever finds...
I know what I'm doing.
You're nuts.
Okay.
It's your responsibility.
Here, Fräulein.
Sergeant,
Ja, bitte, Fräulein.
Danke, Sergeant. Danke.
Ja, bitte, Fräulein.
The blue cloth that was in the window, Herr Meyer. You said one needed...
Yes, Fräulein.
You said...
What did I say?
It's not in the window now.
No, it isn't. Is this the material?
Oh, yes. Yes, that's it. When I didn't see it in the window, I was afraid that... Here is my paper from the American military government.
One moment, Fräulein.
But here is the paper.
It will not be necessary.
I also have money.
Fräulein, all this material was sold while you were gone.
You said it was very expensive.
Still, it was sold.
Oh.
I regret that there's no more at the moment.
If it is sold, why do you keep it on the counter?
Fräulein, there is no more of this cloth at the moment. A half dozen persons called with orders for it.
She's waiting for it. I must have it. You don't want to sell it to me.
There was a gloating light in his eyes. Suddenly, she forgot where she was. All she could retain was the terrible impact of the look on Hermia's face, a classic look that she had long been trying to forget. The blue cloth lay so near to her on the counter, her fingers could almost touch it. Before she knew how it happened, a hot hysteria, a kind of madness, had come over her. The policeman had been waiting for her to do just what she had done. It had all gone according to plan.
Herr policeman.
Yes, Herr Meyer.
I demand that this Jewess be locked up as an attempted thief.
Naturally, Herr Meyer. In fact, I'm a witness myself. Come along, Fräulein.
The policemen were very correct. They did not handle her roughly. They were doing their duty. The question of whether Herr Meyer had been truthful about the sale of cloth was not their concern, although it had to be acknowledged that he was deserving of some praise for his obvious strength of character in deciding to sell only to those he pleased. Anna was brought to the jailhouse.
Take her to cell number 4.
It was clean enough, but it was a cell. Only when the door had slammed shut did Anna begin to cry. Sophia, the girl without a name, was beginning to feel afraid. While there was daylight, she held herself against the terror, but when the light began to lower and evaporate, the restirrings of the old, nameless, unutterable terror came back. For a while, she made no outcry. The gloom pressed evilly down upon her. The silence became unendurable.
Anna! 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 Anna, where are you? Anna! Anna, I need you! Anna! Anna!
Her breathing became more and more agonized. Anna, Anna, her heart begged, Anna, where are you? Over and over again. Then it began. Out of nameless dread, out of horror, out of the memory of unspeakable years, it came. Electrically sped through her limbs, veins, arteries. Hysteria burst through her. And from her lips, there burst suddenly a single unanswered scream. The first scream was at 7 o'clock. Frau Hofstein, who lived downstairs, was rather irritable about it.
My dear husband, it is your duty to inform the Herr Bürgermeister of a crazy Jewess in this house.
I'll speak to him. Meanwhile, turn the radio up a bit louder.
At 8 o'clock, Fräulein Heffner left her second floor with considerable distaste. She was hardly in a proper state of mind for a meeting with her boyfriend.
At 9:05, Frau Fuchs was almost ready to go upstairs and try to help quiet that Jewish Fräulein, if for no other reason than it was making her husband extremely annoyed to listen to her. By 9:25, Herr Heubner, the shoemaker next door, had given up trying to read. Somewhere around 9:30, Sophia gave a sudden start. A terrific pain and spasm had exploded in her heart. A terrible weakness came upon her. Her strength was withered. Pain engulfed her. Her eyes blurred and closed. A fatal, uneven breathing died out through her lips. Some seconds after 9:31, the heart of Sophia, a girl without a name, stopped beating. For the rest of the evening, the occupants of number 31 Dorfstrasse were able to amuse themselves in peace. It was the next morning that an American lieutenant made his routine jail examination.
I want Anna Berg freed at once. Do you understand?
Yes, Herr Leutnant.
The poor girl was hardly to blame.
Yes, Herr Leutnant.
See that Anna Berg is released. Make it schnell.
Yes, Herr Leutnant.
The American lieutenant lit a cigarette and thoughtfully forgot to offer one to the jail director. The whole affair worried him.
After all, people like Herr Meyer didn't have much to do with planting the attitude they now possess. You can't even talk to them. It's like bellowing a deaf mute.
Just about the time the lieutenant reached his office, Anna Berg opened the door to a third-floor room at number 31 Dorfstrasse and started forward with a sudden, knowing shriek. The funeral was not very large or very long. Of the 11 attending Jews who made up a threadbare half circle, all but one were the sole survivors of what once had been large families. All but three were between the ages of 16 and 26. Of the three who were older, only one gave himself an outside chance for further survival. And that chance hinged on an American relative who so far had left written pleas unanswered. And hinged on august international Palestine commissions who had also left written pleas unanswered. And all 11 helped to carry the coffin. Anna's knees pressed against the earth. She had no strength to stand in her affliction. The small, desecrated Jewish cemetery absorbed and filled with a brilliant late morning sunshine. The sun came down on all. It beat alike on the heads of busy German peasants hurrying past on the street, on American troops playing with fat, healthy babies, on their inviting, approving husbandless mothers, on the scrubbed sidewalks, the coffered fields, the chickens and vines and plants in prudent German backyards. And the little group of mourners finished their prayer, turned, and began to file hesitantly out again into the street. Cohesively, keeping close together, the 11 liberated alive moved down the street, threading their way through the populous ranks of the beaten, subjugated enemy.
If you would like a free copy of the script you have just heard, write to the Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we present Dr. Lawrence W. Schwartz, rabbi of the Jewish Community Center of White Plains, New York. Dr. Schwartz.
The story we have just heard so dramatically presented is but one of the innumerable tragedies occurring at this very moment among the displaced people of Europe. There are at present approximately 800,000 displaced persons confined in camps in Germany, Austria, and Italy. Many of these people are survivors of concentration camps, victims of all forms of religious and political persecution and of Nazi terror. Were they to return to their former homes, they would in most instances be returning to persecution and possibly death. Of these people, about 500,000 are Roman Catholics and Greek Catholics. 100,000 are Protestants. 200,000 are Jews. It is almost 2 years since April 1945, when these people were liberated from the Nazi oppression. We are about to usher in the year 1947, and still such tragedies are daily occurrences. How ironic it is that the victorious nation should be doing so much to reestablish the economy of their former enemies, and doing so little to ameliorate the plight of those who suffered most from the war. Is it not discouraging to find that the civilized countries are unwilling to admit to their lands any appreciable number of these refugees? And in the case of the Jews, the homeland, which was solemnly promised to them 25 years ago by the nations of the world, is still inaccessible to them. It is difficult to have faith in the noble expressions of good intentions offered by governments which permit such conditions to continue. And how much patience can we expect of men, women, and children, tortured in body and soul, who are rapidly losing all hope of salvation? The girl without a name has now joined her 6 million annihilated kin. But what are we going to do for the 800,000 displaced persons who are still alive? Will we try to rescue them and give them a chance to rebuild their lives? Or will we just wish them a happy new year?
Thank you, Rabbi Schwartz. Our script today was an adaptation by Morton Wishengrad of a story by Alan Marcus entitled The Girl Without a Name, which appeared in the November edition of the Atlantic Monthly. The music was composed by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Milton Caton. The narrator was Roger DeCoven, and Mitzi Gould was featured as Anna. Cantor David Putterman was the liturgical soloist. The entire production was under the direction of Frank Papp. If you would like a free copy of today's script, write to The Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. This program is a weekly presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations, and comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.